Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship, and the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. And we are here today with two very special guests. They are the phenomenal doctors and authors of Different Thinkers ADHD. Will you guys just take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Hello, my name is Yael Rothman.
And I'm Katya Fredrickson. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. We are pediatric neuropsychologists based out of Maryland in a private practice. And I'm not sure if it would be helpful to explain what a pediatric neuropsychologist is for your listeners.
Yes. Oh, great. It would be. Yeah.
So, yeah. Neuropsychology is a branch of psychology that really looks at brain behavior relationships. And we both have backgrounds. You get our doctorates are in clinical psychology, and then we went on to do postdoctoral fellowships to study pediatric neuropsychology. This means how we apply it is we do mainly assessments where individuals, both of us are more like age 6 to 18, come to us with questions of learning differences, challenges, developmental differences, emotional functioning differences. And we do testing and then help with diagnosis and creating a treatment plan. And that is how families would utilize us. Katya, would you like to add to that?
Well, yeah, and an important part of that, you know, which we emphasize in our feedback with families and with the kids themselves and in the reports is fleshing out not only the areas that are of concern but also being able to say at the end of the day, hey, so-and-so is really good at X, Y, or Z. Here's how we can promote that strength, et cetera. So, yeah, it's sort of trying to get a full view of their functioning and present that to the parents and then the child themselves.
Thank you so much. That is such an important, yes, we show this. This is your profile of how you think and learn best. And also these things are maybe some areas of challenge and how we can support you there.
This is such an important part of what we do because Lindsay and I both operate as individual clinicians working one-on-one with the kiddos, but so often it's like we are not the ones trained to provide the assessments to get the hard evidence, you know, for the families. And so oftentimes we're like, can you please go get a full neuropsych assessment? So that way we can highlight these strengths and really create like life hacks around these specific strengths of your child and know these different points of how they think differently so we can work around that.
And all the information in those assessments is so helpful to both the parents and the therapist or the clinician or professional working with your child. It is like it's almost like a roadmap sometimes I feel like to like how to work best with them and parent them and create a life that works for them.
We're so glad. That's our goal, is to make this treatment plan, but also as we'll talk about today, it's to share with the child themselves so they can become their best self-advocate and learn about how they think and learn best as well.
Yes, and that is one of the main points that we wanted to touch on today. I do want to throw out there, because I'm a women's woman, you are two female doctors who have written a book, and that's a huge celebration in and of itself. So I have to say that, or else I wouldn't be me.
Thank you.
So I often will go and I contract with schools and middle school age groups and do some social emotional skills, whether that's like teamwork or collaboration or problem solving skills, conflict resolution, all the things. And one of the ones that comes up a lot is really breaking down the stigma of thinking differently. Because and I'm trying to like really figure out where that comes from within society, but a lot of my like middle school age boys have this idea that like, oh, I'm ADHD, and so, and it's a like a negative. Like, this is the stigma around it. Like, I'm not as good, or I shouldn't be able to do that. Is that something that you guys are familiar with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, you need to, there needs to be a balanced presentation. I mean, certainly the reason that a diagnosis is assigned for any sort of diagnosis is that there's some pattern of vulnerabilities that's impacting the person in some area of their life, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't call it, I mean, we wouldn't diagnose something otherwise. That's like the basic sort of, you know, box that you have to tick for any of our diagnoses. So there's something there that may be harder for that person, right? And so the idea is to sort of respect that and be like, yeah, hey, I do understand that, you know, XYZ maybe, yeah, sure, that may in fact be harder for you, and you may have to work harder than the average kid around you. And so let's figure out some ways to make you successful in that regard. So sort of acknowledging that certain things are harder, but then what can we do about it, you know, to sort of move forward?
I love that. And I feel like it is a balance, even especially as a therapist in a clinical setting, a balance between validating the experience and also focusing on the strengths that come with it and the things that they're really good at.
Right. I heard someone referred, was talking about a friend of mine was talking about her. She has three teenage sons with ADHD diagnoses, and she was saying how in their household the mantra is ADHD is an explanation for why things are harder, but it's not an excuse. Like, we're still going to be, you know, working to do our best, just with these sorts of, with the understanding that certain things may require more work and effort and sort of respect for that, but not giving up on goals, right?
Yeah, and
I love that. I'm writing it down.
I'll tell her. You like that.
You also talked about how celebrating the differences is so important too. And I know you talk a lot about neurodiversity, and we definitely discussed that as well, and how we kind of equate it that it's to neurodiversity is to human culture as biodiversity is to the ecosystem, right? So we need these pieces to make our world work. We need different thinkers. These are the people who can move our society forward, and to think about these differences as not deficits, but in fact can be strengths as well. So I definitely think that's an important part of this picture, and we can discuss strengths that go along with the ADHD profile here too.
Yeah, I love that. And I think these are all really important things to touch on, because we do have a pretty wide social media audience. And oftentimes we get comments like, well, what's not neurodivergent then? Or stop using these soft terms, or like a lot of feedback, right? As a lot of people are doing the unlearning and relearning of neurodiversity. So the phrase that neurodiversity is to humans like biodiversity is to nature or the world, however you phrased it, was much more elegant than I am now. But like, that to me is such an important aspect, where it's like, it's not this like blanket thing that we're just throwing out. So now everyone's neurodivergent and everything, and now something's wrong with everyone and you can't function. Like, that's not the case.
Right. It's funny because, you know, there used to be, when I was in training, and I'm probably the same for you all as well, I mean, just this idea that there was the quote unquote, you know, comparing a child to the quote unquote neurotypical child. And I know that not everybody has sort of a profile that will have you reaching for some sort of diagnosis per se, but I feel like everybody does have something somewhere on a spectrum, right? Of sort of anxiety or whatever it is. And so these days, I don't feel as much comfortable using that language, like, oh, well, compared to a neurotypical child, your child, blah, blah. It just feels like, well, where is this neurotypical child? I mean, again, there are obviously varying degrees of difficulty, and that's what makes something, you know, sort of stand out or feel less sort of remarkable. But still, I mean, I'm not saying we all have everything, because that's disrespectful to someone for whom, you know, their characteristics that really sort of affect their functioning in a significant way. But that being said, I mean, I think we're much better now at noticing that people who seem to be sort of trucking along just fine in their lives, very often there's something going on there that we might not have been aware of.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of terms that we come across in our own research such as neuromajority and neurominority, are there terms that you're much more comfortable using that we, I mean, that I could adopt, honestly, that's why I'm asking.
I actually quite like that term, neuromajority, neurominority. What do you think, Yael?
I haven't been exposed to it. So that's very interesting to hear. I think I still do talk to my clients about the idea of neurodiversity, neurodivergent, and go through those. But it also, when we talk to the kiddos, I want them to feel comfortable with these terms. So I allow whatever openness and wherever, meet the child where they're at. If they feel that these are empowering terms, that's amazing. And if it's not, then we go down a different path.
Yeah. My son's autistic, and so we have a lot of conversations about what language he likes to have used around his autism. And so I think it's so specific to the individual child that that's what makes being online hard, is because you're going to use terms and it's not the particular term that that person would like to be used. But I think that it really comes down to asking the child how they would like their stuff to be referred to, just like me, like I how I want my experience to be referred to as well.
Right, just shows a basic level of respect, right?
Yeah. And it's been really helpful in, like, for my son, like, accepting and embracing his diagnosis. Is that something he gets control over, is how he refers to it and how our family refers to it and his teachers and things like that.
And that really was an important reason for us to create this resource that we did of Different Thinkers ADHD, our book that was made for elementary school children, because we do feel that it's so important for the child themselves to understand their brain, how it works, how they think and learn best, and then take that information and use it to become their own best advocates in the future, and to challenge misconceptions they might have. I think you said before, maybe this these boys were thinking this was a negative that you were working with, that and sometimes that goes along with some self-deprecating statements, perhaps you hear young people say without knowing why. Instead of, I struggle to focus on things that I don't like, it might be, I'm so stupid, I'll never be as good as so-and-so. And we can replace that with the actual truth of, actually, your brain works this way, and we can support you and help you here and change those negative perceptions.
What inspired you to create this book? And how do you guys know each other?
Oh, well, so we work at the same group practice.
Yeah.
I was there first, but that's, of little significance. So we were part of the same kind of case consult group. And, I guess we decided we liked each other, and had sort of similar perspectives on things. And then this was sort of, I know it takes a while for books to get processed, right? But this, we wrote this during COVID in in 2020. And so I know it's feels like quite a long time ago relative to a publication date in early 2024, but it just takes a while. We were, I think, looking for ways to keep our brains sort of occupied, because we had, our practice had shut for a period of time, and we were both home with young kids and trying to do virtual school and virtual this and virtual that. And this was a nice sort of after bedtime escape to spending time with an adult who we, who was a friend and who could share sort of our interests professionally. And it was a nice opportunity for us to, have that outlet. And so it kind of grew out of that. So that time period, and also just our sense professionally that, all the time clients ask us for book ideas, either for themselves, resources, or to, for their children. And we had a sort of a hard time finding something that really spoke to a specific diagnosis. Like, a lot of the books out there will address various sorts of characteristics or traits without necessarily stepping back and it's describing the entire diagnosis or developmental condition associated with that. And so that's sort of what we were trying to do, to, again, help put names on things and provide sort of a description of the range in which things can look. So our next book is on autism, and similar to this book, the ADHD book, we're presenting three vignettes where we go through sort of just different, because so many different presentations are captured by the same diagnostic label, and that can be so confusing for people and for kids.
Add us to your list for that. Please let us know. I will pre-order it.
Okay, right, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we gave it to the publisher a little while ago, so now we're just waiting on the...
it's just also we want not only to empower the children, but also the families, the caregivers, and other professionals. I think, I'm not sure in your practices, but often parents do come to us with worries about sharing diagnoses with children, scared about giving a label that could be perceived negatively, I think, by the child. And we want them to understand that, unfortunately, kids can give themselves labels no matter what. Like I just said before, these negative labels instead of these more uplifting, positive understandings of who they are. So we're hoping that this book can be a joint effort between a child and their caregiver or family or professional to also feel comfortable around the different thinking style.
I love that. I think as adults, we're doing a lot of unlearning and relearning around ADHD, right? That's specific. This book is specific, different thinkers, ADHD. And so we're doing a lot of unlearning what that means, because I think as a parent now, what I grew up with, the belief around being labeled or diagnosed with a learning difference is different than today.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely unpacking a lot of fears around like parenting a child with ADHD and what the perception will be of their peers and their teachers, and, you know, helping frame it in a way of like, there are a lot of, I use the word superpowers. I'm like, there are a lot of superpowers that you have, that your child has, and it makes them incredible. Like it makes them who they are today, and being able to acknowledge and recognize how that like helps them and how it's a huge part of their personality, and also what ways that it might be more challenging depending on what we're encountering.
For sure. And I don't know if you've had this experience, because we've just heard a lot of stories recently where you share this and then the parent starts identifying a lot of themselves. And I've had a few people who've written me now who have looked through our book and said, oh, this is interesting. Like someone just told me they were reading the book with their 8-year-old, and the 8-year-old said, oh, this is like you, Mom, when you interrupt all the time. She wrote to me about it. I was like, how interesting that you guys can identify and talk about that.
Yep. I think a huge part of our audience are parents that identify their own neurodivergence after their children are diagnosed. And I myself and Lindsay too are both like late life, like adult diagnosed ADHD. Like it wasn't the diagnosis as we were children. And that it's been life-changing to be able to identify it. But again, it's because we had our kids and we're like, oh, like now this makes a lot of sense.
So often. Yeah. I mean, we, at our practice, it is a range of pediatric and adult professionals. And so it's not uncommon that we will, you know, end up, you want to look into your potential sort of profile. Let me refer you to us. Because that can provide such a valuable perspective as a parent, right? I mean, because on the one hand, it's sort of a double-edged sword, right? Because on the one hand, I think it can induce some fear and worry, because you might sort of have had negative experiences related to the characteristics growing up yourself, potentially because things weren't, you know, appropriately identified, or, you know. And so there may be sort of this fear that the child will have sort of the same experience. But then on the flip side, the perspective that the parent can then bring to the child's inner sort of experience and strengths and weaknesses, I think, can make an enormous, you know, and just, it's so powerful, the modeling that we as parents can do, because who do our kids look up to more, right? I mean, for good or ill, there are times when we wish they didn't. They didn't mimic our behavior, right? But to who do they look up to more? The more we can model, oh, wow, you know, yeah, it's really been hard for me to do X, but, you know, I tried this strategy and, you know, it really, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing can be very powerful for children. Yeah.
And there's so much knowledge, or so much power that comes with knowledge, because a big part of what we emphasize is understanding things about yourself help you learn how to regulate and navigate a life that will help you feel successful in parenthood. And that's like a big part of what we discuss, especially when it comes to like emotional regulation and modeling because of the shame and guilt spirals. Will you guys just give us like an introduction to what this book is for our audience who, well, hopefully it's out now, right? It's published, it's released.
This week?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And to add to the women empowerment, our illustrator, it's also a female who was fantastic in this
book. I'm here for it.
Very
exciting. Yes, I love this.
Yeah, I do. I love the illustrations. We were so lucky. Do you want to outline the book yet, Al?
Either way, yeah. We created the book to begin just explaining a little bit about who we are and a little bit about what pediatric neuropsychology is, and then went into brain development. It's not always discussed, I think, with the kids when we're talking about diagnoses in general, but we just wanted to talk about that, what is this amazing organ inside of your head, and give some age-appropriate understanding of what brain development looks like. Especially if we're thinking about specific diagnoses like ADHD, where we know that there is a little bit of a different brain development. So we wanted to kind of address that here too. Then we introduce three different characters who present their symptoms of ADHD a little bit differently from one to the other. So we have a female who presents more in the inattentive presentation, which is a more common presentation in females. And we have a young boy who is having more challenges with impulse control or regulation. So we can kind of see a few different presentations. Not every single thing that can exist, but a few different presentations. And follow them through their days and what's been going on. And then talk about how this constellation of symptoms could mean that you have ADHD. And we talk through what executive functioning is a little bit, and talk through the diagnosis of ADHD, the strengths that go along with being a different thinker, and then how to support some of the challenges. So we end coming up with a little bit of a workbook. So where the child themselves who's reading the book gets to write in a little bit about their strengths, their challenges, and maybe some ideas that they've learned from the book that can be supportive and helpful here too. Katya, would you want to add anything there?
No, I think that was pretty thorough. I mean, the idea is, again, to go beyond, hey, this is Jimmy who struggles with personal space, like a specific, one specific characteristic, and to try to present, and obviously it's so complicated. You can't present every, I mean, you know, present every sort of way in which the diagnosis might look, but to try to be thorough there in terms of, because that's one of the issues I think sometimes with explaining a diagnosis to a child is, parents will sometimes say, oh, well, she won't understand, or she won't believe that she has ADHD because her brother has ADHD and she doesn't get along with him. Or do you know what I mean? Like, he's quite different in the presentation. And so we really thought it was important to flesh out those different vignettes so that kids could hopefully see some characteristics they identified with personally as they went through the book.
Yeah. And I think that's such a powerful piece because it does present so differently.
Mm-hmm. And we tried to end lots of the presentations with, does this ever happen to you, or have you ever had this experience, to try to make the book talk to the child who is consuming the information there and reading.
And we actually, there is also a section where we allude to the fact that ADHD can run in families, and so that provides the parent with a nice opportunity if they would like to sort of say, actually, when I was a kid, I had some of these similar sorts of, you know, so it opens that door if parents want to sort of pursue that.
I love that. We've kind of talked around diagnosing. Why do you think it's important to talk to a child about their diagnosis?
Well, I think, a number of reasons. I think, first of all, again, we sort of worry that the child will, you know, many kids are aware that there's something that isn't going quite right, you know? there's a reason, you know, maybe they've been getting some negative feedback from teachers, from parents, from peers, whatever it is. There's something that isn't going quite the way they would like in their lives. And again, as Yael was saying, you know, very often we as human beings are very quick to jump to a negative self-attribution, which is oftentimes really excessively harsh, you know, so like lots of our kids who are struggling with attention, it may affect their learning. And then they may just think that they're not good learners or whatever, you know, I'm just bad at X, Y, Z, right? And it develops into that unhealthy fixed mindset, which is hard to sort of, can become entrenched, you know? And so again, just this idea of wanting to provide an accurate and just essentially a kinder and more understanding label for or explanation for what's going on. And then also, I think too, there is an element of, I mean, respect, right? I mean, around if there is something and we know what this something is, why would we not share that in a developmentally appropriate manner for the child, right? I mean, don't they deserve to know this about themselves and to know that this is what we've learned from the evaluation process? So there's that element as well that I think is important. And of course, I mean, you know, you can vary that how you present it. And that's what that's why in the book, we're trying to hit this sort of elementary aged, you know, kindergarten and up type target. And so parents can emphasize the areas that, you know, based on their child's developmental level, like you can do a deep dive into the brain, or you can sort of skim over that if your kid's not interested in that or not at that level yet, you know, so just this idea of adapting how we explain things, but nonetheless offering some sort of explanation for the child's well-being.
And our field has really evolved, at least in pediatric neuropsychology. It used to be that really the information was only given to the family, like the parents, where we would sit down and just really tell the parents, here's what's going on, here's the plan, go off and put that into place. And now we all, not all, but I would see the majority of us feel that it's so important to include a child into this conversation as well. And what unfortunately has happened, I'm not sure in your practices if you've had this experience where things have been withheld from a child and then in adolescence they come and find out, oh, actually I did have a diagnosis that I never knew about. It's almost an identity crisis sometimes. Like, that's what explains this? Like, well, I could have known that my whole life and had that spiral of happening, and we want to avoid that. We want people to understand, here's your amazing strengths. Here's some things that are hard for you. Just like everyone in the world, you have strengths and challenges, and here's how we can help.
Yeah, I especially appreciate that you both touched on the intuitive piece. Our children are much more self-aware and intuitive than I think sometimes I even believe of my own children. It takes a minute for my brain to catch up, like, oh, hey. And so oftentimes when I get to operate as a practitioner with a child, I do notice that they're like, why am I not making friends? Why do people do this when I'm around, right? Like these types of curiosity. And I think, Lindsay, if you're open to it, I'm springing it on you, get nervous. I would love to know the impact it had on you to be diagnosed late in life, because I feel like sometimes I have experiences and I'm like, well, if it was like this for me, I wonder if that's what it's like for my child or for the children, right? And so I would just kind of want to know how it impacted you or what kinds of differences it made for you when you finally received your diagnosis.
It helped me understand a lot of things about myself that I had viewed negatively, or I had those entrenched negative self-beliefs about why I struggled with emotional regulation, why I struggled with fall through on certain things, or why I'd, you know, get a hit of dopamine and take everything out of my pantry and then the dopamine would wear off and I'd be like, I never want to finish this. I'm so overwhelmed. And I always just thought I was lazy or I didn't have energy. And that's not what it was. And so it was really empowering for me. And there was also a little bit of grief that came with that, because it was like, how different could my life have been had I known some of these things about myself younger, and how instead of like unpacking and trying to view myself differently in my 30s, I could have not not had all those limiting beliefs about myself, and I would have been able to create ways that work for me. And it's okay to have a laundry basket in every room of the house because I can see them and I can just throw it right in there, and just little things like that, but also bigger things and a lot of grief about maybe how I've been so hard on myself in my life.
Yeah. And isn't the irony that so often when parents are reluctant to share a diagnosis, it's because they're reluctant to hurt the child's feelings in some way. You know what I mean? And it's just, I mean, and as parents, I mean, we can understand where we try to protect our kids, but self-knowledge, you know, restricting their self-knowledge or their ability to understand things about themselves is not, I don't think that that's a good form of protection, you know? And in fact, I mean, it helps us advocate for them and it helps them advocate for themselves. I mean, how often is it, I'm sure that you guys liaise with teachers as part of your work. And, you know, depending on a teacher's level of expertise and experience, they can interpret a child's behavior in the classroom in very different ways, you know? So I'd much rather that a teacher understood that a child has ADHD, for example, versus thinking, oh, well, that kid just doesn't care about learning and is just always busy goofing off kind of thing, because that attitude will affect how the teacher interacts with the child and then can perform the sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, which is, you know, so negative for the student as a learner.
And we hope that teachers don't feel that way about our students, but that does happen. And
well, for sure. I mean, when you're spending like 7 hours a day with someone who is really struggling with self-regulation and you don't know why, I mean, you could see that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good or okay, but you can see that teachers might, you might have your own conclusion.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that is a reality. And we actually, last season of the podcast, had another author. And she had a couple different books, and we specifically talked to her about her elementary age book, There's a Yeti in My Tummy. but she had another book, and she was very specifically passionate about holding that compassionate and empathetic stance for the teachers and being able to provide that bridge of education for the teachers to understand it better, to be able to like connect with the students more, to be more regulated in themselves, so that way we're not viewing those behaviors necessarily as those attacks or those difficulties. And so I think it's just, it's incredible all the different work that's happening in all these different ways if we're able to like pull it in.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's, as you were saying, it's so far ahead and leaps and bounds from where it was when we were, and I think I'm a little older than everybody in this room, but then when we were kids. I think it's I mean, it's just amazing how much it's progressed, like the sorts of labels that, you know, the sorts of things that we would I don't know, just you can't even imagine these days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Lindsay, for being willing to share, because those examples of just believing you're lazy or thinking something's wrong with you because you just never have energy, like these are some very real internalized ways that those labels start, and they do start in childhood. Like that's the basis of where they are. So when we're talking different thinkers, how can...
Wait, hold on. I just want to say one more thing about the label. I think when parents are talking to their children about diagnosis and they want to avoid the label, I think it's important to take a step back and realize where your own beliefs are about the stigma of ADHD, because oftentimes our child doesn't have those same beliefs about ADHD or labels or themselves. And it's really our own beliefs that we need to work through, or our own stuff from childhood, and how we think about these things, or about our child being quote unquote different or having a label. And so go to therapy, talk to somebody, do what you need to do so that you can work through that, so that you can have an open, honest dialogue on an age appropriate level with your child about what's going on with them.
That is so beautifully put. And actually, at the end of our book, we have these tips for parents and caregivers and educators when you read it. Number one is you feel comfortable about the subject matter and work on that for yourself before exposing your child. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, along the lines of those limiting beliefs that our parenting or the quality of parent we are going to be judged because of our children having this diagnosis or because of the behaviors. And so I think that that's one that a lot of us have to unpack that we don't realize we have to unpack. And then just as like a contrast, I also have ADHD and so does my husband, but we, like, for us, it's like a quirky thing. And at least 2 out of 3 of our children have ADHD. For us, it's just like, oh, it's just part of, like, that's just what I do. Like, that's part of the quirkiness. Like, I talk in circles, or I have to come back into the house 3 or 4 times before I actually leave. So I give myself more time before I leave. Like, and so it's interesting to see how we can evolve from this, like, negative belief about myself that I'm lazy or I'm forgetful or I'm stupid, even, to this idea that, like, oh, I have to, like, my keys have a home or else I lose them. Like, right. If they're not in their home, they've run away and I'm not leaving the house because I don't know where they are.
Right. Knowing yourself and developing strategies like the laundry hamper and the, you know, what you were mentioning, such things that seem so sort of minor, but can make such an enormous difference in the quality of your day-to-day life, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just hacking those systems. So before we end, I do want to talk about how celebrating our differences can help make everyone feel included, because that's a big point of your book also.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is, well, I'm sure we all have sort of, you know, our own sort of thoughts about this based on our own personal experience and our families and all of this. But I mean, the idea is that, in my opinion, there's so much culturally that we associate with certain sort of developmental stages. Like, I think about, you know, elementary school, and it's like all the little kids play soccer and they play a musical instrument and they, you know what I mean? Like, there's these sort of cultural mores that are, right, that are sort of embedded in our society. And there are so many kids, though, who don't fit into that mold. Like, my kids don't fit into that mold. We are not sporty, let me tell you that. They inherited no sportiness from me. So there are so many kids who don't fall into those quite narrow constraints. And there's nothing to be ashamed or unhappy about if your kid doesn't fall into those sorts of constraints. Because there are so many other ways to, so many other strengths to develop and just so many other pursuits to enjoy, right? I often talk to, and I'm going a little off subject here, but, you know, parents are often worried about kids going to middle school and, oh, middle school is so scary and all of this. And I'll often say, well, hey, think about it, though. I mean, middle school, suddenly we've moved beyond, like, all this sort of limited range of activities. Like, you can do stage crew and you can do drama and you can, I mean, it just opens up so many potential social avenues for kids who don't necessarily follow that stereotypical mold. And so I just, you know, if we all followed that mold, the world would be a pretty darn boring place, right? And we wouldn't be making that much progress, would we? I mean, it's the idea of all of us sort of pursuing our own sort of interests and passions. And that's one of the things I love about ADHD, is how kids can really just dig deep when they're super interested in something and they enjoy it. And, you know, they can become really knowledgeable about their areas of interest. And I mean, so to me, it's just, I know I've sort of ranged about a bit in this answer, but I feel strongly about it. Just that there's different thinkers make the world go round. And they make the world an interesting place, and they ensure that the world continues to move forward. And that's sort of what we're trying to celebrate in the book, and just in general, when we meet with kids and sort of go over test findings with them. Do you want to add anything, Yael? I know I sort of blathered on a bit there, but
I think there's been many famous people who have come out and talked about how ADHD has benefited their careers. There's a high number of CEOs because they've been able to be different thinkers. They were able to create companies. There's athletes and actors and journalists. There's this research has even shown a higher level of creativity in individuals with ADHD, which is pretty amazing. And when, like Katya said, when you can channel these areas of passion and interest into vocational careers, amazing things happen in the future. We also know that these individuals are resilient and more willing to take risks, and that abundant energy that some possess can be a beautiful thing. So normal variation that we see, this the different thinking style, can be just this amazing gift to so many.
Thank you. Can you say that one phrase again about neurodiversity compared to biodiversity? Because I want to make sure it really lands for our audience.
For sure.
I'm gonna put it on social media.
And Katya, I'm pretty sure I stole it from you, but it was this idea that neurodiversity is to human culture as biodiversity is to the ecosystem.
I'm gonna write that down.
Oh yeah, that we have this range of differences that naturally occurs in our brain. So it's this normal variation in the population.
Beautiful. Can you guys tell us where to find you if you have a presence online, where to find your book?
Sure, we are on Instagram, we have a very simple and short. No, I always make a joke because our handle is sort of clunky, but it's Neuropsych Mom Docs. We were trying to cover all the important parts there because, I mean, being parents is such an enormous part of our identity and what helps us professionally as well. So we're at Neuropsych Mom Docs on Instagram, and our book is available via Amazon or via our publisher, Boystown Press.
Or I think where any Barnes and Noble, wherever yeah. You can read books.
Well, let's hope. Wouldn't it be exciting when we go into a bookstore and actually see it there?
I can't wait. And I mean, it's happening. Yes, that's what's going to happen. But our Instagram handle, if people are looking for evidence-based information, we go through different diagnoses, talk about interventions, school accommodations, different things like that, to try to make this accessible to the public, because not everyone can come and get a neuropsych. So we're hoping that this could be helpful for them as well.
And I'm sure Paige will put all of the links in the show notes because she's so good about doing that, so that you can just go to the show notes if you're listening and click, and it will take you right to purchase the book or right to their social media platform.
Thank you.
Exactly. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. Thank you for providing this affordable resource for parents and children. I think it's going to be really impactful, and I'm definitely going to use it in my practice.
Oh, thank you so much.
We just love hearing that. Thank you so much. That's why we did it.
Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Lindsay at Linz_AdamsLCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much, and see you next time.